on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How are you? It's another edition of the YokeCast podcast, and it is game week. How about that? Volleyball gets its season underway on Friday. They'll play all 3 days over the weekend at Montana State against Oregon, Montana State, and Prairie View A&M. And, of course, football gets its season underway on Saturday afternoon in Ames, Iowa. I'm fired up for Coach Johansson. He's been great to get to know the last several years. Now he gets his chance as the head coach, and we'll see him in game action for the first time this Saturday. And I can't wait for it. I know that he's fired up. I know he's put together a staff he feels really, really good about. They have portaled well for the guys that they lost, and this team's ready to go. So we'll see what they look like on Saturday, and that'll be obviously game number one of a 12 consecutive week stretch for Coyote football. So I am fired up for it. Can't wait. I know you are too. So let's enjoy what we have left of the week, and then Saturday, get out there however you follow Coyote football and enjoy that as well, whether you're going to watch it on Fox, listen on the Coyote Sports Network, maybe a combination of both. You just got to pair those babies up, and you can hear us while watching it on Fox. And maybe you're going to be one of the however many Coyote fans end up at Jack Trice Stadium, probably close to 1,000, maybe a little bit more. We'll see how that goes, but I know that, USD tried to get tickets as much as they could. They sold out of a handful of them, I believe 800 that USD had. They get 300 from Iowa State. They purchased 500 more. It was 800 that they sold out of. And then I know other people are buying some of those tickets on the other markets as well. So hopefully we'll get, a little over 1,000 fans at Jack Trice Stadium and cheer on the Yotes to an effort on Saturday. All right, let's get this podcast kicked off. We've got a big one coming up. We're going to talk to John Walters. He's the play-by-play voice of Iowa State. A chance to talk to him about Dublin, Ireland, and how that thing went. We'll talk to Dante Ward, of course, one of the most famous victories in Coyote football history. Dante Warren was the quarterback for the Yotes and led the Coyotes to a victory over Minnesota. So I had a chance to talk to him about what it takes in a matchup like this. And we'll get it started with triathlon. They open up their season in Hot Springs, South Dakota this weekend. Chelsea Weber, kind enough to join us for the YoteCast podcast. She had a great trip to Columbia from Colorado, and excited for her senior season as a triathlete at the University of South Dakota.
Chelsea, the season is just flying up for you guys, and really in the fall, just four competitions. Do you get excited knowing that you get a competition here this weekend?
Oh, I'm very excited. It's a long but also short season, so I'm excited to see how it goes this weekend.
Triathlon has been a growing sport. South Dakota got in it very, very early when it was an emerging sport, but it's growing throughout USA sponsorships and some of that. What has been your experience watching this grow, kind of coming in as it's grown a little bit to be a part of this triathlon team? What's been your just experience watching the sport grow?
It's been really cool. Like my freshman year, not many people knew about it, especially at the school, and now I mentioned that I'm on the triathlon team and lots of people are interested, asking lots of questions. So it's really cool to see the fans grow and all that stuff.
You come from Colorado. Were you a triathlete before that? How did you get into it? How does somebody get into being a triathlete and going to college for it?
Yeah, I was not a triathlete before. I was a swimmer and I ran cross country in high school. And then I continuously kept getting injured running and it was pretty frustrating. And then my swimming was kind of at a standstill and there wasn't any schools that were interested in me. And then during COVID, all the pools shut down. So my parents made me get on a bicycle and I hated it. Hated it so much. But then after all that biking work, they had me do a triathlon. And at that triathlon, there was a few college schools there, and they were interested in me, and they let me know I could do this in college. And found South Dakota and loved it.
What led you to South Dakota then? You get a little bit of interest, and then obviously you, at some point I would imagine you did a visit. What drew you to here, kind of a place that was still trying to establish itself as a triathlon team?
Definitely their team and their team culture. I reached out to quite a few schools, but no one really responded to me except for Kyle. He was one of the only ones who was willing to give me a chance, and I took a visit, and I just instantly loved all the girls on the team.
How have you grown as a triathlete during your time here?
I think I've grown tremendously. I think back to my freshman year, now that I'm a senior, and I think of some of the stuff that I would never imagine me being able to do today, and it's pretty cool.
When you look at triathlon, obviously there's three different events involved in the – it's hard to be good at everything. Mm-hmm. Which section is your strength? Which is your weakness?
That's a hard question. Originally, I would say swimming, and I'd say that running is my weakness. But I've really focused on my running the past few years, and that's developed quite a bit. But I'd also say that my bike is pretty strong, so I don't know. Kind of depends on the day.
So you're all around good at all of it. That's a good spot to be in. Do you see a future as continuing triathlon beyond the University of South Dakota? I mean, there's opportunities. There's big events. There's small events everywhere. Do you see a future continuing this?
I definitely do. I still feel so new to the sport, and there's so many different levels and distances of the sport that I'd love to try. And even after that, I can see myself just being an old age grouper going out and doing a triathlon.
You had a unique opportunity to go to Colombia, not a city, but the country, and compete as well. How did that come about, and how would you describe that experience?
That was a quite fun experience. My coach, Kyle, there's this like ranking, world ranking, and that's what number you're ranked in the world. And when you go to races, that's when you, and depending on how you place at those races, you get points. So it's all like a race for points kind of sort of game to get your world ranking up. And my coach had mentioned this race in Colombia. And when I initially told my parents, they were like, no, you're not doing that. But I found a few friends who were going, and I was like, why not? It'll be a fun experience. And it was a fun experience.
It worked out in the U23 division. You finished in the top 10. Mm-hmm. Describe that feeling, just going there and competing. Your goal is always to compete and do as good as you can. But a top 10 finish at an event like that, describe that.
Initially when I finished the crossed the finish line, I don't think I really understood, or even when I saw the result, it took a few days to like realize that I actually did pretty well. Yeah, it's a cool to look back and see everyone that I'm around, that I've raced with, placed with, and know that I'm right up there too.
And I believe you were the highest finishing American in the division, which is pretty cool.
Yes, it was pretty cool.
Well, how do you build off of that into this season and try to help this team, you know, accomplish its goals?
I would say just share my race experience with the team, help with any tips, any tricks at these races, and hopefully it helps build the team confidence going into each race.
A lot of people understand triathlon to an extent to know, like, what it is, right? I've always wondered, like, what's the hardest transition between the events? Is there one that's harder than the other?
I would say definitely the swim to bike. You go from being horizontal to vertical. You have to sprint probably a couple hundred meters, hop on your bike, and then cycle as fast as you can for a few minutes and try and get in a group with some girls. And yeah, I would say the swim the bike.
Obviously with triathlon, you got the bike, you got the run, you got the swim. You got to be able to train in all of it. How do you handle training in the off season and as you get into the season? Is it more running and more cardio and that kind of thing, or do you have to balance all of them out?
Definitely balancing them. Usually after a season, I'll reevaluate on which one I need to work more on, and that one I might add more volume in, but really just keeping it fun. That's what makes it go by fast and keeps it fun.
We always talk about, you know, the team aspect in any sport, and you guys get team points. A lot of it's individually, what can you control, that kind of thing. Do you understand, like, when you're competing, what the team aspect is, or is it just simply focusing on your race and seeing where you can finish?
So in triathlon, like, it's a very individual sport, which I think being able to do it here as a team sport is really cool. I love being on the bicycle and looking over and seeing one of my teammates and knowing, okay, like, we can work together on the bike and then get off and have a solid run in place. And you can count how many girls are in the bike pack with you and know that, oh, this team's going to place pretty well when it comes to the finish.
Your first competition of the year coming up this weekend on the other side of the state in Hot Springs. It's kind of crazy, a triathlon event in the state of South Dakota, but pretty unique, great opportunity.
Yes, we went to this race last year, and it was a pretty good hosted race, and it's so pretty there. A lot of people, other teams will come and think, oh, South Dakota, but it turns out to be a pretty fun experience.
All right, is it prettier there or Colorado Springs back home?
Oh, I like it home, but that's a hard question. It is really pretty there, but I like my mountains.
What excites you about this year? Being a senior, obviously you've developed in this program. What excites you about this year and this group that you get to compete with?
Probably just finishing my year strong, seeing what more I can do this last year and see how well the team can do. I think we've all been working together pretty hard, and yeah, I'm excited.
We talked about the future in triathlon. What else is in your future? What are you studying for? What do you hope to do when you grow up someday?
I'm currently studying sports marketing and media, and I'm minoring in Spanish and psychology. So I would love to work for some sports team or sports governing body on their marketing and media side.
All right, well, we'll look forward to it. Hopefully you can have a great deal of success in triathlon, not only at USD, but beyond as well. Good luck this week and good luck this season. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Go Yotes.
That is Chelsea Weber. She is a senior triathlete at the University of South Dakota. They get their season underway in Western South Dakota coming up on Saturday. So we'll keep an eye out for those results at goyotes.com. South Dakota set to open up the season on Saturday. They'll play at Iowa State. The Cyclones off to a 1-0 start to the season after a victory over Kansas State last week in Dublin, Ireland. We're joined now by the voice of the Cyclones, John Walters. John, how are you? The season, you know, for most of us, we're itching to get it going. For you, you're already a game in. How are things for you?
Yeah, it was great to play in that first game of the season. I've always... You know, I'm like a lot of fans out there. I just can't wait for that first college football game. And it wouldn't matter to me if it was, you know, Washington State playing Wyoming. I would have been tuned in to watch that game at 11 a.m., you know, on Saturday. So to actually be involved in the game was really cool. And to have it be a rivalry game in a beautiful place in Dublin, Ireland, it was just incredible. And, you know, full house and just, a you know, two ranked teams. So it was a great stage for the Big 12 and for college football. And I think there were over 4 million viewers, which is terrific for Iowa State in terms of exposure. And so it was just a great experience and great culturally for the players, but also great football-wise to get off to a terrific start to the season because a lot of people pick Kansas State to win the league. So this is a good notch in Iowa State's belt, especially because it was originally going to be a game in Manhattan, Kansas. So it's almost like you picked up a road win already.
Well, heck of a way to get a start. How was the trip? I mean, you talk about it being a great experience, but there's always some challenges when you have to, you know, go that kind of distance for a game, things like that. Seemed like your team handled it very well. What was the experience like for you?
Oh, it was terrific. I'm not great on 8-hour flights. I don't sleep particularly well. Actually, those are the first 2 8-hour flights of my life, and I didn't sleep very well on either end of it. So I'm kind of beat up from it. But most of the players, they really tried to make it a sleep and conducive trip. They lowered the windows. They lowered the air conditioning down to about 65 degrees so those guys could kind of bundle up and sleep and doze off. And so most of them did. You know, and as you said, they played well. It wasn't perfect in the first half, but they recovered and got it going. But, I think even though they didn't have time, you know, in a 3-day visit to go do all the cultural things you'd love to do, they saw what that city's all about. And, you know, the St. Patrick's Cathedral, I know they visited that, built in 1191. I mean, just incredible to think about. And so it was a very neat experience for a football team. And when you think about it, John, you know, volleyball teams and basketball teams, they get to make foreign trips every now and then, but football teams don't. This is completely new for them. And so this was a really neat experience for them, both culturally and football-wise, and I think they got a lot out of it.
I would imagine best-case scenario is you get a week off after you have a trip like that. Coach Campbell was talking about the schedule publicly, and he said it's not set up very good for them. He said it's the toughest schedule he thinks in the country. You have that trip to Ireland, you play a South Dakota team, then Iowa and Arkansas State before you get into conference play. I know that he's going to handle it well because Matt Campbell is a very, very good and professional coach. But he was talking about the schedule, and I wondered if that raised any concerns at all for fans.
Well, I think there's some challenges to the schedule for sure. When you're starting in mid-July with camp and you're thinking, you're hoping that your season's going to go well into December or maybe even January, that's a very long season. The one thing I like about the schedule is that it does have 3 bye weeks in it because Iowa State started so early. So it really breaks up the season well. And I think back to last year's team, and they were so devastated by injuries. Bye weeks are so critical to getting guys healthy. And for Iowa State to have 3 of them this year, they'll play 4 games, have a bye, play 3 games, have a bye, play 3 games, and have another bye. I think it breaks up the schedule really well and allows them to kind of navigate through that long haul. But we'll see. We'll see what kind of momentum they have going into those byes and all those kind of things. But I think that part of it does help because it was such a challenge to stay healthy a year ago. And I'm hopeful that this year's team can stay a little bit healthier.
Rocco Brecht, obviously the quarterback for Iowa State, and he looked like a young man who can really really manage the game and get an offense through. Really helps it appears. That running back, he stood out to me on Saturday. Really think he got a solid running game.
Yeah, Carson Hansen played really well, particularly down the stretch in that game, and ran the ball very well. He's a guy from, I think, Lakeville, Minnesota, who mentioned that he had been recruited by South Dakota, and he's a really talented young back. And Abu Sama is our other running back that plays quite a bit. So it's kind of a 1-2 punch there. But you're right about Rocco. He just has a command of the game. He, you know, Iowa State's last 8 one-possession games, they're 7-1. And most of that's because of him. He just, time after time, last year he led 5 go-ahead drives in the final possession of the game. 4 of them, Iowa State actually won those games. 1 of them, Texas Tech, got the ball back and came down and scored and won. But to do that 5 times in one season is absolutely remarkable. And, you know, this time against Kansas State, the drive was just to put the game away, which was really a sweet way to end a game. I mean, when you take the ball back with 6.5 minutes to go, they've just scored, they've got momentum, and you're able to run out the entire clock. That's just a coach's dream for a way to end the game. And Rocco is so good in those moments where a big play needs to be made. That's where he really excels. If you look at his statistics, you say, yeah, they're good, but they're not off the charts. But if you watch him play, I think he's one of those players that you have to watch play to really appreciate. There's so much confidence within that huddle that he will make the right play, make the right decision. And I think that really helps the whole football team. So he is a terrific player. He's a terrific competitor and winner, and a great guy to have at that position for sure.
John Walters, our guest. He is the voice of the Iowa State Cyclones. John, as you look at this team and what you've seen so far through fall camp and obviously just game number one, what has to be the strength of this team, the identity of this team, if Iowa State is going to reach the goals that it wants to reach?
Well, you know, a year ago, Iowa State had Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins, who are both now with the Houston Texans as their receivers, and 68% of Iowa State's passing yardage went to those two guys. And this year it's completely different. It's by committee. You have really good tight ends. And so that's where I think it kind of starts offensively. You mentioned the running game, but they have a couple of very good tight ends in Gabe Burkle and Benjamin Bramer. And there's some receivers emerging. We saw Dominic Overby and Brett Eskelson each catch touchdown passes in week one. But it's not going to be as reliant on two guys. So the offensive identity is, I think, just going to be a lot of different people involved and Rocco at the head of it all and just making the right decisions. The defensive identity, I think, is trying to get back to what the identity has been for Iowa State defenses with John Haycock, which is a great tackling team, make you earn everything, make you work down your way down the field if you're going to score. Now, Coach Haycock, a year ago, Iowa State kind of couldn't get there. They won 11 games somehow. That was kind of a miracle because they were 15th in the Big 12 out of 16 teams in rush defense. Well, typically, his teams in rush defense are top three in the league. But there were so many injuries at linebacker. They were down to their 9th, 10th guy at linebacker, guys that were on the scout team that just had to go out there and start. And so he was just trying to put Band-Aids on things a year ago defensively. But right now defensively, I think we saw in week one more of the identity that we're used to from an Iowa State defense. And, excuse me, very good tackling, you know, keeping plays in front of you. Now, there were a couple deep balls that Kansas State connected on, and Iowa State has some young guys in the secondary. So you have to kind of get through that part of the equation. But I really like the way this defense is shaping up, and it feels just much more like a typical John Haycock defense.
Matt Campbell's been at Iowa State now for just about 10 years, I would think.
This is his 10th year.
Yeah, 10th year that he's been at Iowa State and continues to try to get Iowa State up as high as they possibly can. They've had, obviously, some good seasons under Matt Campbell. What has he brought to the program since he took over and really now has, at this point, has fine-tuned it and made it his own?
Well, it's amazing, John, because when he came here, I think people knew he was a good coach. You know, second year, they got to a bowl game and won it. Third year, they did well. And immediately, people started saying, okay, well, he's going to be on to the next thing. He's a really good coach. I remember Kirk Herbstreit saying, enjoy it while you can, Cyclone fans, because it's not going to last very long. Well, 10 years later, here he is, you know. And, you know, I think there's a part of him that really wants to do something in a place where it hasn't been done before and prove that he can. And I think the other part that people underestimate is just, you know, the value of your family. And, you know, if his family's happy and his kids are in school and young, and if they're in a great spot, then there really is no great reason for him to go searching for other jobs. And so it's great that he's been here for 10 years. I'm not saying he'll never leave, but he's established something really special. I mean, I would say, having been around the Iowa State program myself for about 45 years now, what he's brought is a belief that in every game you have a chance to win. And Iowa State did not have that for the longest time. You know, I mean, there were certain opponents that you just knew it would take a miracle to beat them. And with Matt, you go into every week just feeling like, well, okay, if they execute and they do things great, that they'll have a chance to win this week. Now, it doesn't happen. I mean, obviously they lose some games, but you always feel like you have a chance. And that's such a big hurdle to get through. And that's what's been really neat about it. So I think he's a great coach in terms of relationships with the players, building them up for life, not just for football. He takes that very seriously, and guys love playing for him. And so it's been an incredible hire for Iowa State. We're very fortunate, and he's the best coach Iowa State's ever had. And we've had some good ones. We've had Johnny Majors and Earl Bruce and Dan McCarney. We've had some good coaches. But Matt is at the top, and what he's done is really special.
I would imagine many Iowa State fans are resting up after that long trip. You talked about it being a long trip to Dublin, Ireland. Plenty of them made the trip there, and they'll be itching to go on Saturday. How would you describe the experience for someone who has never been to Jack Trice Stadium?
It's really a fun place to watch a college football game. I think one of the things about it that's so special is there's tailgating in every direction. You look from the press box, if you just look out to the east, west, north, any way you look, you're going to see Cardinal and Gold tents and tailgates, and it's just a really neat game day environment. And, you know, 61,500 is the second biggest stadium now in the Big 12, and they fill it. You know, it'll be, if not a sellout, it'll be very close. And I think people are just really excited about this football team. And so it's a very energized crowd. They do a good job with the game production. It's a neat place to come play a game. It really is. And we're looking forward to it. You know, home opener is always a very big deal. It should be just a beautiful day. It's supposed to be in the mid-70s. But also understanding how good South Dakota is, and you better be ready to play. Because with Aiden Bauman and Charles Pierre and the guys they have, if you're not ready, you're in for a long day. So It's going to be a really fun game day environment. I hope you come in and really enjoy it, and I think you will.
Yeah, I know we're excited for it. How about for our fans coming in on Friday night? You're experienced in the Ames area. Where are the places that they need to visit for any kind of food or maybe breakfast on Saturday morning, whatever it is? What are some of the favorites of John Walters?
Well, a couple that come to mind for sure. Hickory Park is a barbecue place right on Duff Avenue, not far from the stadium. And then Aunt Maud's is on Main Street, a really good restaurant if you want to spend a little bit more, but it's a really nice restaurant. Those are two great places. There's several. Cornbread is another barbecue place right across from Aunt Maud's by the train tracks, and there's a bunch of them. But I think fans will have no problem finding a good place to sit down and enjoy their Friday night, and I hope they can enjoy the tailgating experience too, because Iowa State fans are very welcoming. You know, if South Dakota State fans are walking around, I'm sure they'll greet them and want to share a beverage with them or say hello and get to know them a little bit. So I hope it's a great experience for your fans that come down. I'm sure you'll have several that do, because, you got a really good program that's really rolling up there. And so I think it'll be a great college football environment for sure.
We're excited for it. Can't wait for game number one Saturday, South Dakota at Iowa State. Kickoff is set for 2:30. John, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Can't wait to see you on Saturday.
Sounds good, John. Thanks for having me.
That is John Walters. He is the play-by-play voice of the Iowa State Cyclones, and certainly appreciate his time joining this week to talk about the Cyclones and the Matt Campbell era, all that good stuff, and what you can expect in Ames and Jack Trice Stadium. I'm excited for it. Should be a great deal of fun on Saturday. As long as both teams come out and play solid, we're going to have a great game on Saturday afternoon. Now it's time to turn our attention to Dante Warren. He quarterbacked one of the greatest wins in Coyote football history in 2010, a win over Minnesota. It's a game that Coyote fans have in their brains and want to experience again. And we talked about not only the running back room that he's been coaching, but also that matchup and what it took for USD to knock off Minnesota.
Dante, the season fast approaching, game number one this weekend. Does it, as a coach, and you've been at this for a while, does it feel like game one creeps up on you fast, or is it time?
I think with all the time you spend in fall camp and nowadays in the summer even, it feels like a long time until this first game hits and never creeps up on you. You seem to always be prepared for it and over-prepared for it. Just really looking forward to just getting this thing, getting on the field and getting off the practice field and letting these boys play and see what we're about.
You've been in charge of the running back room. Let's talk about that group. Obviously, one of the highlights is that Travis Tice, no longer with the program. Felt like he was here for a good decade, but he's finally moving on. He's right now playing for Montreal in the Canadian Football League. Have you been able to follow that? I mean, that's a guy that got here when you were here, and you kind of helped work with him for a number of years, and now you get to see him blossom at the next level.
Yeah, I've actually been following closely his games and just staying in touch with him. Seems to be doing well and having every opportunity to showcase what he can up there. And I think he's done a good job so far this season. In transitioning to the room about him, I think, what Tice brought and I think what Tice left in this room is just a sense of ownership. These guys, you can feel the leadership oozing off of Tice and into this room, and these guys really have stepped up and taken over that reign, I think, and that realm that he obviously left. So
obviously the leader of that group appears to be Charles Pierre Jr. He's coming back after a 1,000-yard season a year ago, and over 20 career rushing touchdowns for him going into this year. What have you noticed out of him as he continues to progress and try to get better and just fine-tune his game?
Yeah, I think a sense of confidence in himself in every situation on the field. A guy that can leave the building, leave Vermillion, and still get his work done, and come back ready, game ready, and then obviously being voted a captain this year. The other guys are seeing it. He's worked on his vocal game and being a vocal leader for us here in the building. So, you know, the things that he wanted to fine-tune, I think he's gotten after it in the offseason and done a good job with that. So, has picked up the leadership in this room, no question. As we all know, he's talented on the field. It was everything else that he wanted to get better at. So,
number of other guys in that room, but we've seen flashes of LJ Phillips and what he can provide. And obviously, you gave a newcomer a scholarship here during fall camp. A guy that I know fans are going to be excited to watch play.
Yeah, got some depth. We've built some depth, I think, over fall camp. You know, LJ obviously has been promising these last two seasons, and just looking forward to getting him in more of a B role than our our F role, if you will. And then Reed Watkins is who you're talking about. Has just done a phenomenal job in fall camp. I think one with his play, but also off the field with his character. Which is why he, you know, the scholarship was well deserving, you know. So, yeah.
When you look at running backs and you're helping to recruit guys into this room, what are characteristics that the running backs have to have if they're going to work for you as a running backs coach and kind of in this room, just how USD wants to play the position?
I think you got to like physicality. And every running back's different. You know, we've got a 6 foot, 220 pounder in this room. We've got a, you know, 5'5", came in at 162 pounder in this room. So, I think the bottom line is, you gotta like physicality, and I think that you gotta be smart. The baseline at which these guys start at, I just want to, you know, when I break, call them individually, when I call my recruits individually and have them talk to me about football, you know, there has to be a level of instinctuality there, and as well as football knowledge. I figure they could get that with me, but I want them to talk me through a play, and I think that was a big thing as we constructed this room, is making sure everybody had a baseline football IQ that would make them successful at this level. So I think it starts with that physicality, IQ, and then obviously being talented, carrying the football, you know, the standard things, vision, speed, that you ask and want to see from your back. So
you've been back here for a number of years following a great playing career at USD. You've seen a couple of different offensive coordinators, now another head coach. What has it meant to you to be a part of this group and watch this program, you know, go through some challenging years, but really the last couple of years rise to levels that it's never been to, been before, and being a part of that?
Yeah, it's been, I would say, a humbling experience as well as an exciting experience. You know, I've grown as well with the program, and just to see us at our height at the highest level that this program's ever been at, and doing things that we've never done at this level, it's just a humbling experience. Thinking back to my playing days and my teammates, all the things that we thought we did, and to see these guys achieving even higher feats. I love it, and just being able to wear the red and white while I do it is an even better thing, right? You know, just love being in Vermilion and getting a chance to coach these guys through, you know, some of these great years that we're having.
Kyle, so open up the season at Iowa State, and many people will talk about the challenges that FCS programs have when they go play in FBS. You know, it's always been less scholarships. We've talked about that and some of that kind of stuff. But we got guys that are hungry. You've been a part of games like this. Of all the great things you did in your career, the game that people want to talk about the most was a win over Minnesota in 2010, a game that saw you throw for a career high and account for 5 touchdowns. What do you, when you go back to that, I mean, what do you remember about just trying to approach that game in a way of belief that we can do it? And at what point in the game did you feel like, wow, we really are good enough to win this game?
Yeah, it's interesting you asked that, because I think about that every year we jump into one of these games. I think it started with our coach's belief. I remember our coaches walking in the locker room, and they just felt different. It was something different about them, and you could tell as a player. And so I carry that with me. As long as the guys feel the confidence coming off of us, you know, they're going to be confident. And then when you get into that game, I think it really started with the first play. We kicked the ball off to them. We had a linebacker out of Arizona go down on kickoff and just punish their kick returner right on our sideline. You could hear it. And this was before they were calling it targeting and all of that, right? So he goes down, cracks their returner, and the entire sideline just lifted, right? And the defense gets off the field. We go score on our first drive, and that was it. We had all the confidence we needed. Obviously took a 2 or 3 score lead into halftime and rode that wave. So, I think translating all that to the guys, right? Start fast, go in there with some confidence, I think this team's in a different stage than we were, right? D2 level program, getting into their first year of Division I football, going to play a powerhouse or a Power 5 conference at that time. The headspace, and I think the mindset here is that gap's not quite as far for these guys. So just keeping them level-headed with that too, but I think those are the things that I like to pass on, and things that I think about.
Do you have to go into it with a mindset of, look, they're a little bit bigger, faster, and stronger, we got to be that much better, or is it just a belief in who you are?
Yeah, I think Coach Johansson says it the best. Once you start looking at logos and believe in all that, the difference of levels, you get into trouble. I think these guys understand they were a call away. They were a camp away from being there, right? There's a lot of guys on that other side that we've recruited, and I make sure to point that out. Guys that almost ended up here, it's just circumstance on a lot of these guys' lives when they were coming out that they didn't end up at that bigger level. So I think these guys get it. There isn't as long as they can get over the logo. And those guys being a labeled a P4 team, I don't think that's an issue at all, size and speed.
What has you've been a part of some of these games where the Yotes have been so darn close to winning? What has to go right in games like this to be able to overcome some of those challenges and just get that win?
Yeah, I think you need to minimize mistakes, obviously, but don't dwell on them. There's another situation. I throw an interception, backed up, backed up, hand the ball back to University of Minnesota's offense at their 30-yard line. And you got to be able to wash that stuff away and move on to the next play. I think limiting mistakes, playing your best, right? Playing efficient football, taking care of the football. And that's exactly what our offense and defense are born to do. We're playing complementary football, and I think that's a recipe for success no matter who you're playing, right? So those are the things, I believe.
You look at this year's team. What do you like about this offense? Obviously, there's a play calling change, but guys like Charles that we talked about, Aiden Bauman's back, things like that. What do you like about this offense that could give this team a chance to have success this year?
Yeah, I like the athleticism of this offense quite a bit. And I like having senior leadership back in the backfield, as well as the guys, our guys returning up front. May not have been starters last year, but guys that have seen significant reps, I like that. I like the confidence we roll out with in practice. The switch, I think the flip of mindset at practice with this offense, and just being hungry and gritty and physical, will be a difference than what we saw from our guys last year, I think. And yeah, I think it never hurts having a returning quarterback, calling it and running it, getting those guys, into the correct correct looks, correct calls, and just directing it on the field, being able to do that. So that's what I'd like about this offense.
I know the fans are excited. Guys are excited. Should be a fun season for the Yotes. Dante, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck this week, and have yourself a great year.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That is Dante Warren. He is the running backs coach at the University of South Dakota. He's been back since 2018 and just has continued to turn out great running backs, and we see that room continue to get better and better and better. And man, it's fun to watch. You know, guys like Travis Tice, who's in the CFL at the Montreal Alouettes. And by the way, he is our Coyote Brotherhood halftime feature coming up on Saturday. Excited to share that conversation with you. Travis Tice, obviously a tremendous running back, just a great person, great family. And he loved the University of South Dakota, loved the Yotes, man. Like, I can't even tell you, like, how many times I talked to him while he was at USD, and he just appreciated so much what USD did for him and for Million and all of that. So I'm excited to share that with you on Saturday. But we certainly appreciate Dante Warren, Chelsea Weber, John Walters joining us here on the Yotecast podcast today. Before we get things wrapped up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics. It's not full-fledged events coming up this week just yet, but we're getting closer and closer and closer as we get some seasons underway for many teams across Coyote Athletics. It starts on Thursday night. The soccer team will be in Cheney, Washington. They take on Eastern Washington, so an opportunity for them to play another road contest. They're 2-1-1 to start the season, so they'll be on the road. It's a two-match trip. They'll play at Eastern Washington on Thursday night. Then on Friday night, volleyball gets its season underway. 5 o'clock is the start time as the Yotes take on the Oregon Ducks in the Montana State Tournament in Bozeman, Montana. Volleyball continues on Saturday night when they take on the host Montana State at 6 o'clock. Women's triathlon will compete in the Southern Hills Collegiate Cup Hot Springs, South Dakota, starting on Saturday morning. Football opens the season at Iowa State at 2:30 in the afternoon. We are on the air at 1:30 with our pregame show on the Coyote Sports Network. You can listen to our pregame show. Even if you're headed to the game or going to watch on TV, whatever, you can always listen anywhere, either on the Coyote Sports Network, or you can also hear all of the action on the Varsity Network app. Download it, search South Dakota, favorite South Dakota. You'll get notified every time we start a broadcast, whether it's men's basketball, women's basketball, the Coyote Report, or a football game as well. So download that, the Varsity Network app, if you don't have it already. Coming up on Sunday, volleyball takes on Prairie View A&M to wrap up their stay at the Montana State Tournament, and soccer is set to take on Idaho on the road in Moscow. And looking ahead to next week, women's golf gets its season underway in Fargo. A two-day tournament, the NDSU Invitational, is set for Tuesday and Wednesday. So lots of things going on in Coyote Athletics. As always, check all the information out, the schedules, the results, all of it at goyotes.com. That's it for me today and this week. Have yourself a tremendous weekend. Gear up. It's opening week for volleyball and football. We're fired up. I know you are too. So let's enjoy what the weekend is to bring. Have yourself a great weekend. As always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.